Hello, and welcome to another episode of Thoughts for a More Sustainable World. We are the hosts of today's episode. I'm Noemi.
And I'm Alex.
As many of you probably already know, sustainable development is a hot-button topic these days with many different perspectives and interpretations. The UN Sustainable Development Goals is probably the most well-known framework addressing sustainability across multiple levels. In this episode, we're going to focus on SDG 10, that is reducing inequalities, which highlights the importance of ensuring equal opportunities and addressing systemic inequities across and within nations.
Yeah, and inequality may not be the first thing that comes to people's minds when talking about sustainable development, but when certain groups and regions remain disadvantaged, global sustainability efforts can unintentionally worsen their situations. For example, the renewable energy transition seen in many high-income countries has led to the displacement of communities, poor working conditions, and pollution in many mineral-rich, low-income countries.
And more specifically, Target 10.3 of SDG 10, which we will spotlight today, emphasizes the need to reduce inequalities and eliminate discriminatory laws by promoting policies and legislation in this regard. This target itself urges us to scrutinize how policies and governments, despite potential good intentions, might actually perpetuate inequities.
And to examine this question, let's take a closer look at the recently signed but not yet implemented EU deforestation regulation, commonly known as EUDR. This law aims to minimize the EU's contribution to global deforestation by regulating the sale and import of 7 primary commodities that are seen as most responsible for deforestation. Among these 7 commodities, it includes palm oil, coffee, and cocoa, all of which come from outside the EU and grown in tropical climates. Compliance with this law requires products to be fully traceable through advanced tools like GPS and satellite monitoring to ensure the products are in fact deforestation free. At first glance, this regulation seems like a step in the right direction for global sustainability, right?
You're right, Alex. However, while EUDR is intended to promote sustainable practices in Europe, this regulation has raised significant concerns among the people at the other end of the value chain. So, for example, the smallholder farmers in the Peruvian Amazon. Peru is a large cocoa producer, but many of the cocoa farmers lack the resources, legal and ownership, or technical infrastructure needed to meet the EUDR's strict requirements. And as a result, they risk losing access to the European market entirely. Can you imagine the impact of this for their livelihoods? Not just that, but that strict policy actually forces them to seek less regulated alternatives, potentially increasing deforestation rather than preventing it.
Yeah, and this is where we see the paradox quite clearly. While the EUDR aligns with environmental conservation goals, it inadvertently undermines SDG 10. Farmers already struggling with inequalities could face increased economic hardship or even bankruptcy. Worse, they might even be forced to turn to less sustainable practices, like growing coca plants, switching to illegal mining, or expanding farmland into forests, just to make ends meet.
That's certainly a phenomenon worth highlighting. And to help us explore this topic, we'll be joined today by Dr. Anki Kaulard. She's a sociologist who has spent years studying sustainable cocoa production in the Peruvian Amazon and has worked closely with the local farmers. Together, we'll examine how global policies like the EUDR can negatively impact smallholder farmers and hinder progress towards SDG 10. We hope to gain some insights into the complexities of ensuring fair outcomes for everyone in global conservation policies. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Kaulard.
Hello, my name is Anke Kaulard. I'm a university teacher at the Pontificia Universidad Católica del Perú, the Catholic University here in Lima. And I'm also a researcher on climate justice. But my heart beats somehow for the cocoa value chains and everything related to cocoa. And I really like chocolate. So this is, I think, why I'm fine here in my position.
Thank you so much for joining our podcast, Anke. Before we dive into the details, could you just share your perspective on how the EUDR impacts both European markets, but also cocoa-producing communities in the Amazon?
Yes. Perhaps quickly to give a few words on my context. I've been living for 20 years here in Peru now, and I part of the year I live in the Amazon region. And also to let me quickly put in context the European norms, the EUDR, because it's part of a wave of extraterritorial efforts by major commodity buyers to regulate global supply chains. And at the same time, in the global south, we see a rise of jurisdictional or landscape sustainability coalitions led by states, civil society, and producers. And although I'm a European, as you said, and should be interested in the demand side of the value chain, in our research with my colleague Kate McDonald from the University of Melbourne and Paula Tafur from the PUC, we are interested in this kind of re-territorialization of the value chain initiatives. And specifically, we are working on cocoa, coffee, and a bit of palm oil also, and putting these chains from the point of view of the people in the global south. So while the EUDR may create synergies, it also risks undermining local cooperatives, empowering extractive coalitions, as we have seen in our work, and influencing land titling in regressive ways. And these dynamics show the need for governance strategies to account for the contested politics of sustainability on the ground.
That's such an interesting point you bring up about coalitions and governance. These might sound like complicated terms for some of our listeners, but they're incredibly important to understand, so let's break it down. From a political ecology perspective, governance isn't just about laws or policies. It's about the processes, structures, and mechanisms through which decisions are made about how resources are used and controlled. For example, when we think about markets like those for cocoa, coffee, or palm oil, it's not just about supply and demand. Governance reminds us that these markets are also shaped by power dynamics, so who gets to decide how the products are produced and consumed? Take the EUDR, as Enki mentioned. It is a clear example of governance where a specific coalition, that is a group of people with shared perspectives and interests, has shaped the decision-making process. In this case, it seems to reflect the priorities of extractive coalitions that focus on market expansion, often overlooking the inequalities that these decisions can create. This raises an important question. What role do non-European actors play in shaping these global markets? How much say do smallholder cocoa farmers in the Peruvian Amazon or any other producing countries have in the governance of these value chains? Could you share your thoughts on that?
Yes, of course. It's important to state that in Peru, two key coalitions shape the debate about the EU deforestation regulation. So on the one hand, we have the Environmentally Sustainable Production Coalition, as we called it in our research, which includes NGOs, smallholder farmers, indigenous peoples from the Amazon mostly, but also from the Andean parts, and some subnational governments also. Supported by development agencies from the United States, Europe also, and others, this coalition promotes sustainable practices like organic and fair trade certifications, especially in the cocoa and coffee sectors, which are traditionally smallholder sectors. Notable initiatives include the US-backed Cocoa Alliance and the Peruvian Association of Cacao Producers, APCACAO, representing more than 30,000 members. And smallholder groups like the National Coffee Board and the Board for Palm Oil Producers also align with this coalition to advocate for niche markets. They are mainly concentrating on niche markets of cocoa, coffee, and palm oil. And on the other hand, we have conversely the Productive Growth Coalition, as we called it in our paper, which comprises large commodity exporters and traders and associations such as the Association of Exporters, ADEX, in Peru, and the Peruvian Chamber of Commerce of Coffee and Cocoa, which represents 65% of the coffee exporters, for example. This group prioritizes market expansion over certifications like fair trade or organic certifications, and is closely linked to influential political and economic entities like in the Congress, and also they have their allies in the very big firms and traders. While both sides agreed on the EUDR's potential to protect the Amazon, conflicting development paradigms underpin these approaches.
Wow, thanks for giving us a clear view on the specific actors involved in these coalitions. It really highlights the complexity of the situation. So on the one hand, we can look at this through the lens of environmental justice. From that perspective, we can see how environmental benefits and burdens are often distributed unequally among different social groups. And it's usually rural local communities that bear the heaviest burdens, like losing land or resources. In this case, it's clear that organizations like the Peruvian Association of Cocoa are among those who stand to lose the most. And they're the ones who are likely to face the consequences of the EUDR's implementation. But on the other hand, it is more complex than that. There are international actors, such as the US-backed Cocoa Alliance, as you mentioned, who would like to support these local groups and are actively joining in on conservation and justice efforts. So when we talk about the governance of cocoa markets, it's not just a matter of justice, but we also need to analyze this from a multi-level governance perspective that's embedded within a broader socio-ecological system. And for those who are unfamiliar with the term, socio-ecological systems refer to the complex interconnected relationships between human societies and natural environments. And this perspective highlights how resources, their users, and governance mechanisms interact across multiple scales in both social and ecological dimensions. And this brings us to our last question, and that is, are market-based approaches really the best tool for creating equitable conservation laws? The EUDR is, at its core, a market-driven policy, as it really focuses on the end result. But can policies like these truly ensure fairness for all stakeholders, or do they risk overlooking the complexities on the ground? And finally, how might we integrate these market-driven approaches with other frameworks to achieve more inclusive and equitable outcomes?
Okay, as the EUDR still has not been implemented, there are still no real effects in this field, but there is a tension between those who see the EUDR mainly as a threat to the subsistence of small producers and those who perceive it as an opportunity to consolidate a more sustainable and equitable production model. So on the one hand, if producing countries fail to adapt promptly, this regulation could adversely affect thousands of families in vulnerable conditions that depend on these cocoa and coffee as alternatives to the illicit crops, coca, or switch to the other less profitable and sustainable crops. There's an increase in coca crops that has already been officially reported here in Peru due to the lack of profitability in commodities such as coffee. It's very clear that in the last months, USAID and their anti-drug programs again are much more present in the Amazon than they have one year ago. And consequently, a perverse incentive could be reverting to informal or illegal activities, exacerbating deforestation even. So these critical voices warn that if cooperative organizations are not strengthened, Peru could end up like other countries producing low quality coffee and cocoa, with the majority of the population returning to coca. And this is totally contrary to the idea of the EUDR, isn't it? So in concrete, some buyers might resort to laundering coffee through African countries with less regulation, but paying lower prices. This would particularly affect small individual producers who could be forced to abandon production because they cannot compete anymore in these bigger formal value chains that have to show traceability, for example. And another example of this is that challenges related to the formalization of workers in the different enterprises or traders of the value chain required by the EUDR have become increasingly difficult to meet for small producers' organizations. Some cooperatives in San Martin, the region where we did the investigation, argue that it is unrealistic to formalize all workers under the current state framework and pay fair salaries. With many cooperatives already struggling or collapsing during the pandemic due to trade interruptions or plagues, they now find it even more challenging to comply with new regulations.
That's such an important point about formalizing work for smaller farmers. Smallholder farms often don't have the same resources or capacities as large-scale farms to legally hire workers, which means much of the labor remains informal. And you're absolutely right. According to the International Labor Organization, the financial strains caused by COVID-19 and subsequent shock to international markets has made things even harder for smallholder farmers worldwide. This really raises a concern, right? If the EUDR imposes strict requirements without addressing these underlying challenges, it could actually make farming even more expensive for small farmers who are already struggling.
Yes, totally. And another risk, or key risk in this context, is that has been widely unattended in the technical discussions around the implementation of the norm in Peru, is the lack of land titles, which is a major barrier to implementing the EUDR, prompting the Peruvian Ministry of Agriculture to intensify efforts for individual rural titling with EU and donor support. And these, they have set very high goals because they aim to issue nearly 100,000 individual land titles in 2024, in this year. While this initiative targets regions like San Martin, where land overlaps with indigenous territories and forests, it risks unintended consequences, including further deforestation, because people without clear titles could rush in an unordered way into the forests. Thus, although the growing state capacity for individual agricultural land titling seems to be a direct and positive influence pathway of the EUDR that allows producers to comply with the legal requirement of land titles, it also, on the other hand, bears broad risks for finally contributing even more to deforestation. And this would be also, again, totally ironic, because the philosophy of the EUDR is all the contrary.
It's true. Governments across the Global South, not just Peru, have needed to make overhauls to their own regulations, such as land title systems, in response to the EUDR. For example, in Ethiopia, where a third of their coffee is exported to the EU, coffee is mostly produced by smallholder farmers in forested areas. This makes the traceability and certification extremely difficult, and buyers in Europe have already been turning away from Ethiopian coffee as a result. Although the Ethiopian government has devised an action plan to comply with the EUDR, it has also asked for more time and support from Europe to make the necessary adjustments.
Ankit, thank you so much for your time. We'll make sure to include links to the academic publications you've been producing around this research with the podcast. And with these last examples and your insightful answer, we believe that political ecology and environmental justice are essential for shaping fair regulations, not only within the European Union, but also in the Global South. Looking at these through a socio-ecological lens helps us understand how governance is shaped by complex interaction across local, regional, and global levels. It also emphasizes the roles of different actors, each with their own interest and power dynamics, in influencing decisions about resources and policies. As Enke pointed out to us, challenges such as land titling and the formalization of labor, particularly in regions like San Martin, highlight the structural barriers that smallholder farmers face in meeting EUDR's requirements. These issues underscore the need for future updates to the EUDR to be more aligned with the realities of the Peruvian context and the broader Global South. And of course, we can't overlook the grassroots organizations Enki mentioned. Their collective efforts to support the families they represent are essential as they continue striving for a more sustainable and equitable world. So thank you so much, Enki, and thank you to our wonderful audience. That's all for this chapter.